politics, there are hardly any good ideas. One comes along perhaps every decade, so be sure you notice it. The Master. Angela had found that she loved Barker. Barker was ugly. Its town hall had been built in the 1950s when there wasn't enough money around for beauty. A clumsy gyratory system had carved its way through medieval streets. In the high street, now pedestrianized, there wasn't a single local shop left. All chains, just like everywhere else. But Barker was alive. Things were still made here. In its narrow avenues and red brick crescents, people left home every morning for factories and regional headquarters. Not everyone had given up hope. The town was small enough for her to be swiftly recognized. Her sermons became shorter and more urgent. She took to wearing jeans and trainers with her black shirt and dog collar. Nick and Ben made friends with sharp-eyed, assertive Asian boys who teased her at home about the wine, yet seemed to have a natural politeness their English contemporaries did not. She ordered in Chinese and curry, Thai and chips. Caro was with her every weekend, and now that she was in government, she had the use of a limousine and driver. She'd sweep up outside the house, bursting with bundles of paper and all the latest gossip. Sometimes she brought a young man from the office to work with her for a few hours. He always seemed to be the same young man, yet his name kept changing. Angela assumed there was a type. Anyway, life in Barker was both faster and more interesting than it had been in Pebbleton. Angela was so happy that she was managing to drink quite a bit less. She kept the wine, mostly, for the weekends. Above all, she found that she noticed more and thought more deeply. The constituency people who would drop into the house seemed unpretentious and friendly. Nobody in Barker made a lot of money. There was a couple on the outskirts of town who had won several million pounds in the lottery, and there was a scattering of converted farmhouses in the nearby countryside where city workers, exhausted by the week, would come for a rest. Yet, so far as Angela could tell, the town was devoid of jealousy. The lottery couple were said to have blown most of their money on cars, which they then pranged. And nobody envied the draining existence of the rich commuters who would occasionally be seen tottering, white-faced, into the town's few delicatessens or wine merchants. If happiness means not having to crane your neck upwards at people earning more, then Barker was a happy town. The people who came to church, the people in local politics, were hard-working but relaxed, as if England still really existed. Here, to be a head teacher, a surveyor, or the works manager of a light engineering company was to have reached the top of the social tree. Caroline as MP and Angela as a vicar were considered part of the social elite. That would never have been the case in London or any of the big cities or even in Scotland. But it made Angela think. And when Angela thought, things changed. Miraculously, one soft, warm Thursday evening, Caroline was back from London early. The boys were downstairs on the Xbox. Caro and Angela were curled on the sofa in Angela's study upstairs. And Angela, having thought, now spoke. What do people want? That's the question you lot at Westminster never really ask. Because you think you know what they want. More money, more stuff, better medicines, longer holidays. She gently pushed herself away from Caroline and stood up. She needed to use her arms. But from what I can see around here, they're not made happier by money. I know lots of happy people, and I'm beginning to see what makes them happy. Ill, well, young, old, they come and talk to me. Teachers, women working in shops, traffic wardens, engineers, you name it. And I listen. And Caro, darling, what makes people happy is very simple. It's to be respected. I don't just mean status in the sense of titles or handles. They want a certain look to come into their neighbour's eyes when they pass them in the street. They want to be known and admired for being, I don't know, good, I suppose. That's the fundamental need that the church has always understood and that politics, particularly perhaps you so-called socialists, has never got. This was, for Angela, quite a short speech, and initially Caro was disappointed. She drained her glass. "It's lovely to have a philosopher in the family," she said, "but I've come up here with two heavy boxes full of practical and immediate decisions that have to be taken. Which measure of inflation should be used to uprate the minimum wage? Whether we should bring our gangmaster regulations into line with those of the European Union? And complaints from both branches of the local Muslim community about favouritism being shown to the other. Plus, a long, whining letter from the Prime Minister complaining about government drift and hinting strongly that he's about to give me the Home Office. So with the best will in the world, I'm not absolutely sure where your lecture on respect is taking us. It'll make a fine sermon, I see that." Angela, having upended the last of the bottle into their glasses, a good half inch more for her than for Caroline, Caro noted, interrupted. "Well, let's start with that letter from the PM. He's quite right. Nobody has the faintest idea what the Labour Party really stands for these days. What's it all about, sweetheart? You haven't got the revenues to build a proper modern welfare state, and even if you did, the state's failed so often. You stand for equality, except that you're too scared of the rich and powerful to really squeeze them. Probably rightly, because in the modern world they just bugger off somewhere else. You want to rein in big business, but you don't know how. So consider this. Think of it as the Barker Bulletin. To persuade the people who really do have power, the leaders of industry and business, to do your work for you, you have to offer them something radically different. If you could get all the biggest companies to pay a living wage and to offer serious, well-funded traineeships, and not to base themselves overseas but to pay a fair amount of tax, how much of your real agenda would you be able to accomplish? Caroline considered. Almost all of it. It would make us serious, certainly. But I've met the glossy, bumptious men and women who run the big companies, and it's no good, darling, it's no good. They'd give us some of what we want, but only in return for tax breaks that would undermine and cripple us. Which is exactly where my little sermon comes in. You're offering them the wrong thing. You're being too narrow. You still control the state. That is, you control the fount of honours. You control how people are seen, whether or not they're respected. Just imagine if you divided all the major companies into two groups, those that did, broadly speaking, the right thing, and those that didn't. The companies that played fair and paid fair would be designated, I don't know, call them national merit companies or something. Only their bosses would be eligible for honours. They'd get respect, real respect. Only they would be appointed to commissions and inquiries into the future of their industries. Only they would be invited onto the Prime Minister's plane when he's making his next trade visit to China or Brazil. Only their companies would be legally allowed to fund political parties. They'd get, in short, political and public respect, and they'd get it for the right reasons. Because they were the leaders of business and industry who paid people properly, trained the next generation and paid their taxes. They'd be the genuinely admired knights of industry looked up to and respected by their fellow citizens. The rest, the ones who didn't play ball, would just be grubby little profit mongers. Caroline laughed and applauded. "You are so gorgeously naive, Angela. You're still Pep on the edge of the playing field with your eyes burning bright, dreaming your dreams. In the horrid real world, none of that would work. We'd be laughed out of court." Angela kissed her, without anger, on the forehead. "You couldn't be more wrong. All you people down there in that buzzy, self-important world of politics have lost sight of how the rest of us think. Give it a go. Though, speaking of being laughed out of court, you need the support of the King." "Do you know the King?" "Not yet, darling, but it can't be long. Let me think about this. Do you mind if I talk to the master?" Angela, who had already spoken to the master's wife, shrugged and shook her head. She was thinking about pouring herself another glass of wine. It didn't look as if there would be any sex tonight, so she did. What happened to the idea